Patrick, I want to start with learning a little bit about the program on Friday.
Okay. The program on Friday, over the last couple of weeks, Kim and myself, I'm the director of Black Programs, the acting director, and she's a co-director, that we've been hosting several vigils just to kind of stand in solidarity with everything that the unrest is happening over the U.S., because you have the protests, you have the riots, you have the looting, the burning, all those different things. But over the last few weeks, we really wanted to kind of bring the focus back to that, to the death of these individuals, these young men and these young women. You know, so we decided to have these vigils. So the event, which is Juneteenth, to signify or to talk about June the 19th, when officially all enslaved individual, Black individuals were freed, that we want to kind of tie in those two. And we also thought that it was important to make sure that all of our students or the community of NMSU kind of join into this vigil slash commemoration. So the event on Friday to celebrate and Juneteenth is also combined with the vigil to stand in solidarity. So we're going to have different speakers there. We're going to have some poetry there. We're going to have some Black Greeks and organizations there, sororities and fraternities, which were critical as well to educating and supporting the community. And then we're going to have different other activities, as well as the voting, promoting the voting registration efforts to make sure that people not only raise their voices vocally, but also raise their voices at the ballot box. So it should be a very powerful event. It's only an hour and a half, but we thought it was very important that the NMSU students, faculty, and staff come together on our campus to kind of raise our voices and stand in solidarity.
I want to talk about something you mentioned there, voter registration. Mm-hmm. We know nationally that voter registration is down, expected in part because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But we also know that there's a lot of continued voter suppression in many different ways. Close to home here in Texas, there is, as I'm sure you're aware, a court battle that mm-hmm. Texas does not want to allow people to request an absentee ballot if they're afraid to go vote due to the pandemic. In New Mexico, we're not in that situation because we can request an absentee ballot for any reason, mm-hmm. but there are states, including Texas, more than a dozen states that do mm-hmm. not allow requests for an absentee ballot for any reason. And African Americans have also faced a variety of different other forms of voter suppression. And now, combined with difficulty for increasing voter registration, there's a lot of concern about this. We have a incredibly important election in the fall. Some would argue the most important in our lifetimes. What are your thoughts on this, and about how to bridge the gap, if you will, to try to be able to get more people registered to vote and then get them out there at the polls?
Well, that was the purpose for these vigils as well, and I'm glad that students, the Black Student Association, as well as ASNMSU, which is the Associated Students at New Mexico State University, that they wanted to put this at the forefront because you do have these barriers to people actually get into the ballot box, especially people of color. And as you mentioned before, this pandemic only compounds that situation because, again, oftentimes students of communities of color don't have that privilege to be able to stand in long lines, to have that privilege to be able to drive to certain locations, especially if you live in a remote location, if you're Native American on a reservation or something like that. So there are different efforts that the African American community or the Black community or the community of color have fought for this right to vote. But throughout history, which this is a continuum, you mentioned earlier about this particular, I guess, protest or this particular moment being different from the rest. And it is different from the rest because you have a number of communities from the Black community to Hispanic to the Native American that are raising their voices. Even the white community that they're raising their voices. In the past, it really has just only been majorly the Black community addressing these concerns. And oftentimes our concerns, our voices were muted and silenced. You know, when we talked about mass incarceration of men of color, our voices were muted and silent. When we talked about police brutality, muted and silent in the past, but something about this particular incident where galvanized all different people from all races and ethnicities and backgrounds, and voter registration is a part of that. That piece that we may not be able to regulate people's heart, but policies can regulate or protect me from the heartless. You know, so we know that this is a critical point in time where we need a leader in office who can bring all groups together from all different backgrounds, who can bring kind of minimize these divides. And so we can only do that by raising our voice. And this voter suppression is very interesting that you brought up, because a friend of mine about a week ago mentioned that he went to vote, but the person at the counter told him that they didn't have a ballot or something for people who are independent. You know, so we were very concerned about that because she was saying he was unable to vote because he's not a Republican or a Democrat. To me, those different efforts are just microaggressive behaviors to keep people from going to the ballot box, because this is a critical point in time. And we can protest, we can walk down the streets, but it can only matter if we're able to contribute or be able to raise our voices through policies, procedures to make these type of positive changes.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Well, of course, in New Mexico, we in our primary elections, that's a longstanding controversy that independent voters are not allowed to participate. And it's been the subject of a lot of discussion in the legislature, and even a lawsuit that thus far has not been successful. So it's something very, very concerning, as well as, of course, the situation in Georgia, where we saw people waiting in lines for hours and hours on end, in many cases outside in pouring rain because of social distancing. The lines were enormous. And some argue that, of course, is not really in the spirit of allowing people their ability to vote if you have to wait in line for 4, 5, 6 hours to vote.
Well, and like I said earlier, that type of waiting in line is a privilege that most of the time people of color just do not have. Even when I vote, you only have maybe a couple of hours that you can take off of work, maybe your lunch break or something like that, you know. And so a lot of us don't have that privilege to say, oh, I'm gonna take half of the day off to wait in a long line. So either you stand in line and risk losing your job, or you just kind of bypass and go back to work and maybe attempt to come back another day or wait in another long line. So to me, we have to meet people where we are, because if we say that this is a way to raise your voice, we need to start reaching people in different ways and giving them several different options and opportunities to vote. But yes, that is very problematic when you have to wait in line. And luckily, some people are so committed that they will wait in line. But then, like I said, for the most part, people of color or African Americans, we just don't have that privilege to be able to take time off work to be there 4 and 5 hours. So it is very problematic when you don't provide your community different options to be able to exercise this right. And for Black folks, we have died and fought for these particular rights. We've been abused for these rights. We have been killed for these rights. So when we think about Juneteenth, that's why we commemorate it, because a lot of suffering and a lot of persistence and a lot of grief has gone into this right to vote, only to have it suppressed. And that's why I said this protest is a continuation of historical systemic oppression, and we have to find a way for everyone to be able to raise their voices, and just standing in long lines there should be more options than just being able to stand in long lines.
Okay. I want to wrap up today following up on something that you mentioned, and certainly we've heard a number of people say this, including the Reverend Al Sharpton, who spoke at a memorial service for George Floyd. He said that he did feel that this time was different, that finally change was going to occur, that there would be changes perhaps in policing, in prosecution of police officers and others who commit abuses. I want to get your take on this and where you think this is going to go.
I do. I agree with the Reverend Al Sharpton that there is something about this protest, and even if you look at other civil rights activists like Angela Davis, they will always frame it saying there is something different about this, that it is definitely a continuation of all of the protests in the past from civil rights, but this time it is different because you have everyone raising their voice. Like I said, in the past, it has always mainly been African Americans of from our community raising our voice, which again was often muted in silence. But I am inspired and actually humbled by the diversity that we see in these groups. I was actually out on Saturday, this past Saturday, with one of my students kind of protesting as well. And it was just a rainbow of colors of people from different backgrounds. And so I've been in protests before, but it was mainly just people of color or black folks in the protest. But I was just inspired to see all of these people in this particular protest. So there is something different about this, that now America sees their sons and their daughters and their uncles out there being having to protest or being abused by the police. Again, it was in the past that sometimes we look away because the person doesn't look like us, or we make excuses or put these barriers up. But I think now, because you have so many different types of people from different backgrounds out there protesting, and people are seeing that if they would do it to this person, then they will do it to us as well. So I think there will be a massive change in the way that we police, in the way that our relationships are kind of fostered with the police, and policy changes across the board, because this is a protest that will not go away anytime soon. And I'm committed, and I see that my students are committed, and around the world, people are committed to this type of change, because I think we've reached that tipping point that enough is enough, that something has to change, that even when you saw the brutal death of George Floyd, I think what people saw is it's not about whether you're white or black, it's about humanity, and that's something that everybody can connect to. I may not be able to connect to you because you're white or that you're Asian, but I know that you're a human being, and with anything that you've done, you deserve a level of respect. So I think that's what people are focusing on now, that it's not about black or white or Asian or whatever. It's about humanity. And if we are going to live up this promise of the American dream, we have to start treating everyone in a very humane way. And I think that's what has changed it, is that we've taken these blinders off, and a lot of people have started really realizing it's not just about color, because we're all in this together, and that it's about humanity. That's why groups say no justice, no peace, that if you can look at someone be brutally murdered and still have and still sleep well, then that's an issue. So I think what people saw was this inhumane way that this young man was being treated, and it just kind of tussled. It moved them to this space of unrest. And even with myself, it moved me to this space of unrest, and that's why we kind of started having these vigils, because people needed a way to kind of articulate their pain, their sadness, their frustration, and their anger. So I think all of these rush of emotions have made this particular moment in time different from the past, because people get it now that it's about humanity. And so people can galvanize and understand that piece.
All right. Patrick, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.